Welcome to the Toxin Free-ish podcast. I'm your host, Wendy, an environmental toxins lawyer turned clean living coach. And today I'm really excited to welcome the founders of Risewell Toothpaste, Dr. Derek, a dentist, and Kari Estrada, onto the show. In the last couple of years, Risewell has made a name for itself in the toxin-free living space, and they are a top pick for toothpaste on my toxin-free shopping guide for a reason. More recently, a class action lawsuit filed against them has sparked debate in the industry concerning PFAS in toothpaste. I invited Dr. Derek and Kari on today to share their journey, why they created Risewell, how they carefully choose and source their ingredients, their rigorous testing, which includes PFAS, and how they feel about the lawsuit filed against them and their decision to fight to prove their innocence. Now, since this interview was recorded, the lawsuit was voluntarily dismissed against Risewell. They fought the lawsuit. They proved through testing that their toothpaste has no PFAS in it. They refused to settle, and the plaintiffs in the suit dropped the case. We've got a lot to cover. Let's dive in. I love origin stories of companies because I find that the cleanest companies that are doing the best, the right thing, that have the most ethics, it really comes from a personal place. They're doing it for a very personal reason. So I would love to hear from both of you. Why did you come together to create this company? What was the reason that brought you to even thinking, you know, we really should make a clean, safe toothpaste?
Yeah, it's a fun story. And it starts about, how long is it at this point? Maybe 7 years ago. I have always struggled with something called polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS. So for my whole life, I never had a period. And when John and I were thinking about having children, I knew that we would probably need some assistance. And I ended up having to go through the IVF process. And before beginning that journey, I wanted to make sure we were setting ourselves up for success, that we'd only have to go through it once, hopefully, just given how both expensive and trying it is on your body. We sat down with our doctor early on in that process, and we asked him that question, how do we make this a success? And he said, besides following his instructions, taking the right medications, eating the right things, he also noted that we wanted to be careful about the everyday products that we were using and making sure there wasn't anything harmful in those products. And at that point, I think we both had been living a fairly healthy life. We'd been eating somewhat healthily, or so we thought. We went home and looked in our bathroom, turned everything upside down. We had used this app called the Think Dirty app at the time and had, I think, scanned every single product and realized most of the products in our bathroom were not that clean. So we had to go through the process of replacing everything that we had been using for many years. And it was fairly easy to replace most of those products to better options. The one thing we really struggled with is toothpaste. And of course, immediately my brother, Dr. Derek, who's an incredible dentist, we had immediately reached out to him and asked for his advice on recommendations for a good, better for you natural toothpaste. And his response was, look, you might as well brush with water because natural toothpaste really doesn't have any effective ingredients. They essentially take out the fluoride and they don't replace it with anything. So that was really the moment that the three of us said, there has to be a better way. There has to be a product that can embody all of the effectiveness of conventional toothpaste, but also have ingredients that are truly safe enough to eat because it's going in your mouth. And as Derek taught both of us, your gums are highly absorbent. And so even though you're swallowing your toothpaste, you're not swallowing your toothpaste, you're absorbing it twice a day. And a lot of that is actually getting into your body. And think sublingual medications where you put it under your tongue and it's one of the faster ways to get into your system. So that was really the moment that the three of us decided that we wanted to at least explore whether or not we could solve this problem of having something that's truly effective, but also really safe.
I love that. Derek, Dr. Derek, the dentist. So you're kind of the brains of the science of Risewell. Were you surprised when she reached out to you and asked you that question? You really didn't have an alternative to give her?
Yeah, it was an interesting conversation because looking at the landscape back then, there just weren't great alternatives. And we applaud our predecessors and other companies in the space. But yeah, if you're taking fluoride out, there just weren't great alternatives to have a remineralizing agent out there until we started doing some research and discovered that in other countries, molecules like hydroxyapatite, which is naturally occurring, it's what your enamel is already made out of, it's calcium and phosphate, has been used safely in Japan and other countries for decades as a remineralizer without any of the potential deleterious health consequences that some people worry about with fluoride. And for whatever reason, it really never caught on in this market. And we saw a perfect opportunity to help reintroduce it and help folks looking for safer alternatives.
Yeah, one of the things I love about your website is you actually post all of those studies. I can go and I can click the learn button, and the transparency of Risewell is something that I really value. And you can go through and you can actually learn and walk through those studies. So let's talk about that for a second. When you very first introduced Risewell toothpaste, you had your original version, which was your mineral hydroxyapatite version. What was it like as a company that wanted to create such a clean, safe product, sourcing those ingredients? How much effort does it take to really get the best sourcing, the best ingredients?
Yeah, and that's sort of really where John focuses his time primarily. And in the beginning, what we thought would be a quick process to, well, we figured it out. We want to use hydroxyapatite and pair it with other better for you ingredients. It actually took many years to find suppliers that met our requirements, and actually visiting with the suppliers and seeing where the products come from and understanding kind of everything about each of the suppliers that we work with was actually a very long process, because there, I think some people or some companies, they go for where the cheapest options they can find. And we just wanted to find the highest quality. And so to do that for each one of the ingredients actually took a long time. And for something like hydroxyapatite, there are different options. There's the more naturally mined hydroxyapatite, which is a slightly larger crystal. And then there's the nano hydroxyapatite, which is chemically manufactured. And there's lots of different sources of that. You have different quality choices. There's a whole spectrum. So that was a process that, while we thought it would be quick to launch a product, I think from idea to actual launch, it was probably 3 years. So it wasn't a 1 month research process. It was a many years process, just finding the right suppliers to work with.
So let's talk about the ingredients. First, let's start with what you absolutely knew you did not want in your toothpaste. What were the things that, as a blooming company, you said, these are no's, we're not going to put these ingredients in this toothpaste?
So as I noted in the beginning, I think the two tenets of our companies are, number one, we want to treat our products like food as much as we can. Obviously, we're not recommending people eat the whole string of floss, but as much as we can treat all of the ingredients like food, we think that's really important, because it's going into your mouth, which again is going into your body, whether or not you're swallowing it. And there's also advantages to being able to have a product where you can leave some of it on your enamel overnight, for instance, and not actually have to spit it out. And number two, we also wanted to make sure that everything that we did was really backed by science and was a product that dentists could recommend for their patients. That was really, if we couldn't solve both of those problems, then we wouldn't have created a product. And in terms of ingredients, and Derek, you can feel free to elaborate on some of these, but I think that for us, we're not an anti-fluoride company by any means. I think there are use cases and for some people to use fluoride. It is more economical versus hydroxyapatite. It does work when applied topically, and that's different, obviously, than when it's in your drinking water. But for us, if there is an option that is just as effective or more than fluoride without any of the safety issues, it was really a no-brainer to be using hydroxyapatite. And then for other ingredients, we wanted to avoid things like foaming agents like SLS, because those can be, your mouth membranes are very sensitive. And so it's not actually necessary to have foaming, the rabid dog foaming at the mouth. That's not actually a good thing for your mouth, even though it might seem like it's brushing your teeth better. And then other ingredients like triclosan is something that has actually been banned in hand soap, but is still found in some toothpaste. But again, it's really that combination of both effective ingredients, so everything serving a purpose in the toothpaste, but also ingredients that can be thought of as really food-like, which does eliminate a lot of other ingredients as well. Anything that I missed that's important to highlight, Derek?
Those are the big ones, yeah.
So let's talk about natural flavors. Even some of the cleanest toothpaste companies that are producing quality products that don't have fluoride, that don't have the main big things that you just mentioned that companies, that consumers are looking for, they are using natural flavors, especially when it comes to kids' toothpaste, to try to create kind of these bubble gummy watermelon, these flavors. What did you decide to do? Because you don't have natural flavors in your toothpaste.
That's correct. And that was a decision in that sort of 3-year process of forming the company and finding the right suppliers. We had a lot of requests for, exactly as you said, bubblegum, watermelon, berry flavored kids' toothpaste. So that was something we explored. Is there a way to do that, that we can truly understand what is in this natural flavor, quote unquote? And we reached out to a number of flavor houses. And when we requested the specifics of what exactly made up that natural flavor that makes it taste like berries for kids, they can't disclose what's actually in it because that's their proprietary formula. And so that was really a big issue for us, because we can't have something in our products that we want to treat like food that ultimately we don't know what it is. And so for us, I think everything that we're using in our products, we can really get to the source of exactly what it is. And that's how we settled on our cake batter flavored, which it's actually much more innocent than it sounds. It is just real vanilla extract, one of our most expensive ingredients that we use. It's actually real vanilla extract. It's not natural vanilla flavoring. It's the real stuff. And that was really important, because we could then, with kids, which is particularly is with them swallowing most of the toothpaste in rare cases. I don't think my two boys have ever spit out the toothpaste. And I can rest assured knowing that at least I know exactly where all the ingredients are coming from. And so that was something really important for us. And I think that's, flavor houses can tell you it's natural and they can assure you that it's safe and it's fine. But for us, that really, unfortunately, wasn't it enough.
Yeah. One of the things I love is you guys do have really high standards when it comes to ingredients. And you also do something that there's not another company that does this. And it's one of the reasons it gravitated me towards your company to begin with. And that is that you guys actually test. You test the tubes of toothpaste that you have for things like PFAS, which we will talk about the lawsuit at the end of this. I first want to get through all the great things that I love about the company and educate the people who are listening to this on ingredients and toothpaste. But I was able to reach out to your company through an email that's right on your website and immediately get, yep, we test and here's the results. Here's what you want. Do you want anything else? The transparency is truly incredible. Was that something you guys talked about from the very beginning as well?
Yes, it was, because back to the amount of time it took just to get the company off the ground, I think speaks to the amount of diligence that we've done on every single one of the ingredients that goes into each of our products. So the transparency piece was really important, because I don't want to tell other mothers like myself that, oh, it's okay if your kid eats the whole tube of toothpaste, and actually not know what their child is ingesting. And so I wanted to be as transparent as possible. And all of us at the company have always done that. That's been our philosophy, I think, to our detriment at times, because it leaves you, if you're open about where you're sourcing everything from, obviously others can copy you, but that's obviously a good form of flattery. So we'll take it at that. But that's something that's core to our company. And that's really an important part. And I think we're always looking for ways to be more and more transparent with consumers as it makes sense. At the far side of that, we have to also do what is feasible. And so I think one could say, you should test every single tube of toothpaste that you've ever manufactured. That's not really feasible. Can we test every batch that we make for all of our products? Yes, that's possible. And that's something that actually we believe in. But going so far as doing every single product, it's just, you can't be that extreme about it, but you want to do what's right for consumers. And we're always looking for ways to be more transparent and do even more.
Yeah, that would be like, what, a $40 tube of toothpaste?
Exactly. Yes, that would get very expensive. Or maybe 1,000, actually.
Yeah, it would be, yeah, if people knew how much that testing costs, they would be like, oh yeah, you're going to pay for that?
And keep in mind, it's good testing versus the cheaper testing where that is actually prone to more errors. And so for us, like, we don't want to just do the cheapo test to say we test to get results that may or may not be accurate. Like, we will want to spend the most we can to make sure we're getting the most accurate results. So yeah, it would probably be a nearly $2,000 tube of toothpaste, which I don't think would go over well with consumers.
No, not at all. You probably wouldn't have a company to sell toothpaste to.
Exactly.
So let's dig into the ingredients, because I think oral health is one of those things that most people are starting to realize, like, your overall health is very closely related to your oral health. And more it's being talked about online. And so I'd really love to just have maybe Dr. Derek, people who have things like inflammation or bleeding gums or cavities or these other issues, how does that relate to like their overall health going into the future?
Yeah, so it's a great connection and thank you for asking. So when you're looking at the connection between oral health and systemic health, I feel weird even having to say that because it's just total overall body health. Your mouth is part of your body. Digestion starts in the mouth. Like my sister said, your mouth is a highly absorbent area, a lot of surface area for absorption. Inflammation and infection are a cornerstone that pop up routinely in my practice. And when you're looking at people with untreated periodontal disease, puffy red gums that bleed routinely. I mean, bleeding, it's funny. If you had blood coming out of your elbow, you'd be like, oh, that's not normal. But, oh, blood in the mouth, yeah, that's no problem. It's just my gums. They bleed all the time. I routinely talk to my patients about that. And Mrs. Smith, you have untreated periodontal disease and that chronic infection, inflammation. There's research to suggest that there may be a link between cardiovascular health, looking at diabetes. Diabetes is interesting because it's potentially had the link of a bidirectional modality where if you have untreated diabetes, it can affect negatively your gingival health. And if you already have periodontal disease, it can potentially exacerbate your already occurring diabetes. Looking at the respiratory system, if you have untreated bacteria and decay and disease in your mouth, you potentially could be seeding those aerosols into your lungs and looking at affecting the respiratory system. So there's a whole host of modalities and interactions and interplay between what's happening in your mouth and the rest of your body. If your mouth is not healthy, the rest of your body is probably in need of repair as well. So it's critical that digestion and health start in the mouth.
Let me ask you a question. Would you love to know how to read a label without being super confused about what ingredients you should be avoiding and which ones are clean? If you said yes, listen up. This is for you. I remember being that person standing in aisles at Target trying to read labels. And back then, I had zero idea what I was looking for. I didn't know what a preservative was or an ethoxylated ingredient. It was all like reading a foreign language. But now that I'm a savvy label reader, I wanted to create a simple way to teach you how to read labels without being overwhelmed. That's why I created a resource I know you are going to love. It's a list of my top 25 toxins to avoid and my simple three-step hack for reading labels. It's not just any hack. It's the exact same method that I use every single day to review products and read labels, and it's the same process I teach all of my students. With these three steps and a little bit of practice, you'll be able to tell within 90 seconds if a product is clean or not. I personally believe that everyone should have this skill. You can't be fooled by greenwashing and fancy marketing when you know how to look for ingredients you want to avoid. So whether you're just starting out on this toxin-free journey or you're a seasoned pro, this information is so valuable. And here's the best part. It's completely free. Just head over to www.toxinstoavoid.com. That's www.toxinstoavoid.com. Grab your download and start reading labels like a pro today. Yeah, it's such an important message. And I'll just tell my own personal story here that I have thyroid disease. I have Hashimoto's. I talk very openly about my healing journey. But one of the things I haven't really talked in depth about is that as a part of me trying to figure out how to get off of thyroid medication, how to reduce what I was on, how to heal my autoimmune. And I'm happy to say 5 years now, I have had my Hashimoto's in remission. But that doesn't mean I don't still have some underlying root cause issues that I continue to try to support with health and wellness and other things. But I had bleeding gums like daily. Like I would floss and they would bleed daily. And it was right after I switched my medication. And so my doctor was like, hey, what have you changed, you know, lately? And I immediately was concerned because I knew the connection. I knew that if I had bleeding gums and this inflammation in my gums, it meant I probably had inflammation other places in my body as well and or other issues. And so we ended up tweaking the thyroid medication that I was on. I ended up taking some really good high quality vitamin C. he talked to me about whether or not that had something to do with it. And it eventually stopped. It eventually went away. Now I'm happy to say that my gums are doing great. But I immediately took that experience as something is wrong with my overall health. I have a root cause that's causing this. And my gums bleeding is not normal and it's not good for me. But I do think a lot of people think it's normal.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's one of the reasons too, is that unfortunately, periodontal disease in early stages does not cause pain. And selfishly, I wish it did cause pain because pain is a great motivator. It's a great teaching tool to let you know that something is amiss, something needs treatment. But unfortunately, I think there are estimates to say that 40% of Americans may have untreated potential perio inflammation and conditions out there. So there's a whole host of people that need help. A lot of Americans don't see their dentist routinely. And dentists really are on the front lines of healthcare because we have a better recall system than a lot of physicians. People are trained and routinely come to their dentist twice a year. If they're seeing a dentist, that's been ingrained into you that for health benefits, it's advantageous to see your dentist at least twice a year for cleanings and probably three or four times a year if you've got any level of periodontal risk factors.
Yeah, this is good. I hope people are listening to this and maybe I should go to the dentist. Maybe I should get in. It's definitely something people do avoid. I think the fear factor of having things in your mouth. There's a lot of people out there that are legitimately afraid to go to the dentist, which I don't blame them. But it's important for them to know your overall health, that your mouth can be a telltale symptom that you might have something else going on other than the quality of your teeth and whether or not you have cavities and kind of those basic things. Like you said, it's related to the other things like inflammation, diabetes, cardiovascular. Like it's really important. So if you're listening to this, please go get your teeth clean. Go see a dentist.
I'd love to talk on that fear factor you mentioned there briefly. And a lot of it goes back to childhood. And I really empathize with folks that have had traumatic experiences as a child because that, I agree, can really turn you off as an adult to seeing dental because look, you're lying back. It's a vulnerable position. You can't see what's going on. They're using language you don't really understand. There's a lot of weird noises and smells and senses that are happening, unfortunately. So really getting your child acclimated to positive dental experiences. I don't treat children, but I do tell expectant mothers and young people with young families out there that even if there's no sign of trouble, when your children start getting teeth around age 6 months, the American Association of Pediatric Dentistry recommends, you know, around at least by age one, you should start by getting comfortable in a dental office, maybe sitting on your parents' lap, getting used to having someone explore the teeth, explore the soft tissues, just to create those positive experiences, reinforce good feelings. So by the time Junior goes into the dentist for the first time at age five, they don't have a mouthful of decay. And no, of course, it's going to be a traumatic experience when that's your first encounter, when you have a mouthload of work that needs to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. Since the health of your mouth and your biome of your mouth are so important, let's talk about actual ingredients, like the things you put into your toothpaste and why. So can we start with the hydroxyapatite? And I want to ask a question because your original formula had the mineral hydroxyapatite, which Corey talked about how you got it sourced.
Yes.
Nano hydroxyapatite. There is some controversy, and anybody who is online for any amount of time knows that Europe took a look at nano hydroxyapatite and said, hey, we actually think this could potentially be problematic. These tiny rod shaped sizes of nano hydroxyapatite, we potentially are finding them in organs. We're finding them in places they're not supposed to be. There's a long list of health impacts that comes with nano hydroxyapatite. They ended up saying, but there's this one company that actually makes one that we don't see these problems. This one is safe. When you guys started looking at nanohydroxyapatite, what were the things you thought through when you were sourcing it and making the decision to use it?
So simply put, I would say that the reason that we came out with the Pro line later and our original formulation just had the regular natural hydroxyapatite is with similar to our thinking with all the other ingredients, we wanted things as close to the source as possible. And obviously nano hydroxyapatite is chemically manufactured. So it's slightly removed from really using hydroxyapatite that's mined from, ours comes from France. I think that there are advantages to both, honestly. And I think we want to provide our consumers where if one does have worries, and again, we're using the version of nano hydroxyapatite that has been deemed safe by the EU. So yep, we have absolutely no concerns with it. Our Pro line is essentially a higher, so we use a higher percentage of a combination of both the regular, the natural hydroxyapatite and the nano combined. So for people who might have more teeth issues or more sensitivity, nano hydroxyapatite has been shown to be slightly better for sensitivity in particular, essentially because the particle size is smaller. And so it's able to fill in the holes of your teeth. And I'll go on just like a little bit of a tangent, and Derek, feel free to correct me because you're really the guy with all the science. But for sensitivity, it's interesting because a lot of people use the classic sensitivity toothpaste on the market. I won't name any specific names, but essentially what those products do is they have an ingredient in them that for people who do have teeth sensitivity, it actually just numbs your teeth. And so it works for a short period of time by making you not feel as much. And that can provide relief for some people. And also like note that one is getting sensitivity because their enamel is essentially being stripped away because they're either whitening their teeth too much. And the whitening process is usually stripping away your enamel. And when you strip away enough of your enamel, you're essentially exposing these tubes in your teeth, which leads to sensitivity. And so you can either numb it, which is like putting a Band-Aid on an issue. And that actually really gets to the root of sensitivity. And so it's a neat advantage. There's lots of cool things that are effective ingredients in our products do. There's hydroxyapatite. Then there's also some of the sugar alcohols like xylitol that's extremely beneficial for the mouth as well. But when you really try to get to the root of issues in your mouth, as opposed to doing things that actually might have downstream consequences, mouthwash being another great example. If there's alcohol in your mouthwash, the thinking, which it was logical at the time, put alcohol in mouthwash because you want to kill bacteria, the bad bacteria. Unfortunately, it doesn't just kill bad bacteria, it also kills the good bacteria. So if there's alcohol in your mouthwash, you are killing both all of the good stuff and also all of the bad stuff, which one doesn't want to do. You'd like to foster all of the good bacteria that's in your mouth. We try to take a much more targeted approach with what we're killing or not in the mouth, and hopefully just targeting the bad bacteria, which xylitol actually does that. It tricks the bad bacteria into thinking it's sugar. They go to eat it. They can't digest it. And so it actually is a targeted way just to kill the bad bacteria with preserving the good stuff.
And one caveat there I wanted to add to those descriptions there. In the European Union's ruling, they were looking at the deleterious shape was needle shape. Needle shape was the one of the nanoparticle that was ending up in strange places here. So that we don't use that. It was the rod shape that was deemed safe by the manufacturing company in Europe, Fluidinova, that we sourced from. So that was just the one caveat.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, and like I said, I contacted your company and was like, I want to know where you get this from. And they were like, here's all of our paperwork. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. I was definitely impressed. So let's touch on xylitol one more time. I'm glad you brought it up because there have been news articles recently about maybe the consumption of xylitol and from consuming it from the perspective of like foods and other things may have some future consequences. And so I'm seeing a lot of people say, does xylitol really help? And is there any side effects to consuming it, swallowing it? And I lived in Europe for 5 years and xylitol is all the rage over there. Like, it's in the gum. Everyone's chewing xylitol gum. The dentists over there are tell you, chew this xylitol gum. It's something that is very common in Europe. I think it's more of a recent thing that people are talking about here in toothpaste in the United States. Why xylitol? Obviously, Corey already explained it, but are there other advantages to it? I know that some people believe that it directly can be protective of cavities.
And so some of the research that we have seen looking at xylitol is suggesting the bacteriostatic nature of it. It's a naturally occurring sugar alcohol, and it really, as my sister elaborated, impairs the ability of bacteria to digest the sugar, which then leads to the acid. So if they can't ferment the sugar, that they're using xylitol instead of, say, sucrose from our normal diet that we eat, it impairs the ability to create the acid. And that's wonderful because the acids, that's what lowers the pH in the mouth, and pH is a measure of acidity. And so when your pH drops below the critical 5.5 range, that's when the decay-causing process is theorized to start. And so if there's no acids, you're not going to get into that lower pH range. You stay at a higher pH, which means it's more neutral or less acidic. And that is advantageous because saliva is a great buffering capacity. Saliva buffers against an acidic environment. So achieving and having good saliva flow is important. They put xylitol in chewing gum. Chewing gum is great for stimulating saliva. And if you have sugar-free or a xylitol version, that's great because you're both stimulating saliva and avoiding sucrose or the other deleterious sugars that bacteria can use to create the acids. So I have a whole host of advantages. Again, naturally occurring. Not recommended to give to dogs. It does create some gastro upset in some folks, and you don't want to give it to your pets. Some folks may have a mild GI upset. Just be aware of that. But has all in all, has a wonderful safety profile and a lot of great effects for the oral health as well.
And I would just add quickly that Peter Attia actually did a really interesting sort of breakdown of some of the recent controversies and studies with xylitol that I'd point people to go review. And I think some of the issues with studies is, number one, who's funding these studies? Number two, if you look at the quantity of xylitol given, it was extremely high that produced the negative effects. And I think quantity matters for everything. We are not using a huge amount in percentage terms in our tube. Of course, I do a lot of sort of keto baking. And if you use large quantities of any of these sugars, as my brother notes, there can be stomach side effects for some people, of course. But the overwhelming majority of evidence suggests only benefits really for your oral health, which is why it's something that we use in our products, but also really feel strongly about from an effectiveness standpoint.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go check that out. Thank you. And I personally have never had an issue. Like, I've been using xylitol for a really long time. And ironically, all the parents just heard that and listened to that. And they were like, oh, wait, so sugar is a problem? Can you expand just a little bit and educate people on what sugar, like actual sugar, consuming a lot of sugar, if you have kids who are eating gummy things that have a lot of sugar in it, and just gummy stuff in general, like what does that do to your teeth?
So that's a great portion. So yeah, the curiology or the study of decay, a lot of it goes back to nutrition. When you have an environment where you're eating and consuming sugary foods, you're creating the fuel ripe for bacteria to create the acids. And when you look at our nutrition, essentially everything you're eating is reducing to proteins, fat, and sugar. And not necessarily sweet dessert type foods that are the obvious sugary things, but even things like the carcinogenicity of things like crackers, those little crackers, it's really unbelievable. Those foods, they just reduce to sugars. It's fuel ripe for bacteria to convert into the acids. So that's why a lot of my conversations with patients all go back to nutrition. And that's really the cornerstone of keeping your mouth healthy, just keeping debris off your teeth. Don't go to bed without brushing food particles off your teeth. And it doesn't necessarily have to be sweet dessert type foods, pastas, crackers, cookies, those type things, all carbohydrate type foods. They're all at the elemental level reduced to glucose particles. And that's where the fuel source begins for the decay causing process. Keeping debris off your food, looking at your saliva quality. I have a pretty old population here in South Florida, and unfortunately, a lot of the side effects of their medication is dry mouth or xerostomia. And in that environment, you see a lot of decay because you're losing the ability of saliva to buffer against that pH dropping into the acidic range. So we talk about saliva substitutes and our mouth rinses to truly try and neutralize and bring the pH back up to a more neutral level. But a lot of it does go back to nutrition, and it's interesting. There was a fellow back in the 1930s, Dr. Weston Price. He was a dentist almost 100 years ago now, and he did something pretty remarkable back then. At that time period, he actually took time away from his practice and traveled to different parts of the world and had a hypothesis looking at the native populations, and you'd see a beautiful dental arch, really low incidences of decay, whereas people, these other populations that were close to trading ports where Westerners would come in and trade, you'd see introduction of the Western diet, so, quote unquote. Unfortunately, you'd see higher incidence of decay for, again, fermentable carbohydrates, missing teeth at a younger age, collapsed arches, looking at airway comorbidities as well.
I want to pivot a little bit to glycerin. Glycerin is something that there are a lot of topics of on the internet. I think there's a lot of topics in general on the internet. One of them is that if you have glycerin in a toothpaste with hydroxyapatite, it actually counteracts its effectiveness. How do you feel about that?
So we've seen some of those reports and we're not buying it. I think at the lower levels we have, we're not seeing the ability to block the hydroxyapatite. You're still getting good contact time on the teeth, looking to remineralize incipient carious lesions here. So I think it's a little overblown. And with something, we do take these things seriously and we consider and look at everything that's out there. But I just don't feel that there's enough causation to justify the potential correlation in some of the articles that are out there.
Yeah, I agree. I read some of them and came to the same conclusion. And this is also another example of who paid for the study, right? Sure. Who's benefiting from some of it? And that doesn't mean that all science is always biased, but I do think it's a really important critical thinking skill. When you do look at a study, you think, who benefits from this? Who funded it? And when I took a look at the studies, there was actually like one main one, actually. To me, I walked away with, it was a really extreme situation. I think that the contact time of the glycerin was like so long. It's now been a while since I've read it, but it definitely was not representing what a few minutes of brushing your teeth actually looked like. So
you make an interesting point too, looking at Qui Bono or Follow the Money or Who Benefits, and looking at sugar companies funding nutritional studies trying to vilify fats when sugar, look, it tastes great, but man, if what these companies knew back then, it's pretty interesting how deleterious the damaging effects of sugar and the addictive potential is. Some of these molecules that companies have potentially known for a long time, yet it's still pumped into so many beverages, foods, things you wouldn't even imagine, salad dressings and condiments, yeah, and all kinds of products just loaded with sugar, because it does taste great, but it's just really, it's terrible for your oral health and overall health.
Okay, let's talk about mint. There's conversations about essential oils or natural mints. They disturb the natural biome of your mouth and therefore are not good for you. And it's interesting, as I hear these things, I go back to what Corey said at the very beginning. Maybe we should just all be brushing our teeth with water at this point, because everything that everyone's trying to do to make their health better, to try to be more natural, to try to get away from some of these synthetic, more toxic ingredients. And then the internet gets loaded with all of this controversy of, oh, hydroxyapatite actually is this, or glycerin isn't good for this, or now mint is bad for you. And then I feel like everyone feels very overwhelmed and a whole lot like, what's the point anyway? Then we'll just go back to using our crap that we know is toxic. But at the end of the day, there's this massive overwhelm and I think excess of information that's coming at everyone. And this is a newer one that I have been seeing people sharing with me, you know, oh, I see that mint or essential oils or these things in your mouth are actually really bad for the biome of your mouth and we should be avoiding them. How do you feel about that?
So I hear what you're talking about, and thank you for the opportunity and question there. And looking at what's out there, used in moderation, I haven't seen that mint is deleteriously affecting the microbiome of your mouth. Now, again, everything's in moderation and everything is also trade-offs. We have a series of choices to make. We're trying to create a pleasant experience, and a lot of people do a minty fresh breath. And if there are customers that have concerns over essential oils, we do offer a flavorless option that doesn't have essential oils or mints, if that's your preference, and that's great. But if you want to take the choice of having minty breath with mint used in moderation, we provide that for people. So again, I think, look, there was that radio contest where someone died by drinking too much water. No one would ever accuse water of being lethal, but look, anything in excess can have deleterious consequences. And looking at very small amounts, I just don't see that it is disrupting your microbiome in a significant fashion.
And look, I think the truth is there are really no solid studies to suggest that's true. And ultimately, we have to go where the science goes. And that's why with hydroxyapatite, we have 50 years of data. And this was an ingredient invented by NASA in the 70s because astronauts, literally their enamel were weakening and they needed to figure out how to create it chemically. And so we know that the safety data is there. We've seen a population, Japan predominantly uses that versus fluoride. So we can look at large populational studies and see that their caries rates are actually lower than in the US. And I think if one wants to use a flavor, which to Derek's point is it can be a critical part of the experience for some people and motivator to get them to actually brush their teeth twice a day, your choices are you can use something that is truly natural, close to the source, like essential oils, or you can use a natural flavor, which again, no company can actually disclose exactly what that is. And if I am going to the risk of using an essential oil at low quantities versus something that's just an unknown, which we don't know what it is, and every company's version is different, I would much rather choose essential oil. And again, if it's a concern for you, use the flavorless. So that's why we try to provide consumers with as many options as possible.
I love that answer. And that actually rolls into my last ingredient question, was about how you decided which natural sweeteners that you guys wanted to use. And it is interesting because at the same time that people come to me and say, I really want a all natural experience, I want something that will prevent cavities in my kids, I want something that is safe, they also say in the same breath, but I want it to taste good. Right? Their kids, how do you get your kids to brush their teeth if you're putting something in their mouth that is either flavorless or tastes funny? Parents are looking for toothpaste that their kids enjoy brushing their teeth with, because if your kids don't like it, it's going to be a lot harder to build that habit and get them to do it. And a lot of companies are using artificial sugars, and which you guys don't use. So talk to me a little bit about why you chose the natural sweeteners you chose.
For us, obviously, having the xylitol in there was important. And then the other, we also use erythritol and sorbitol as well. And honestly, I think that one wants to make sure you have a high enough percentage to, again, actually do something. And that's actually a key thing to note about our company versus others, is that one can have hydroxyapatite in their toothpaste. If it's just a little tiny dash of it, it's probably not doing much for your teeth. You actually have to have a high enough percentage. And that's true on the xylitol side as well. And so we knew that there were certain minimums that we had to meet in order to be truly effective. And then the remainder, like the specifics of the mix of one versus the other, a big part of that is honestly the taste profile. Because one, you could actually have a toothpaste that's 90% hydroxyapatite or 90% xylitol and have it be very high. But like, the user experience also wouldn't be that great. If it was very high percentage hydroxyapatite, you'd be largely using a white powdery substance that like probably wouldn't feel great kind of putting on your toothbrush and brushing around. And so I think one can't underestimate the importance of that as well, because again, like, one wants to feel excited about using their toothpaste twice a day and not dreading putting this mud stuff on their teeth and having that kind of experience.
Especially with kids. My family loves your toothpaste. My kids love the way your toothpaste tastes. I did at one point, there was a lot of conversation around charcoal. Charcoal has become very popular. How do you guys feel about people using activated charcoal on their teeth?
I would just caution people that, look, it was a fun fad and trend and makes for great videos, but that stuff is so abrasive. You can inadvertently be brushing away part of your enamel, potentially exposing the dentin, which is the enamel's thin down by the gum line. And when you have exposed dentin, that's just going to exacerbate your sensitivity, because that's the sensitive layer of tooth structure. So I would just caution people that, look, it may strip away stains, but you might be stripping away parts of your enamel too. Just be aware of how abrasive those particles are. And you do want to be using something a little gentler on your system, is what I would recommend.
Yeah, I think this is actually a big problem right now. The charcoal is very popular still. The fad has not ended. It's still continuing. I still get questions about this all the time. And yet there are also a huge amount of people that have teeth sensitivity. And I often have wondered to myself, does this charcoal fad have anything to do with the fact that I get a lot of questions about teeth sensitivity and whether or not the abrasive nature of somebody using charcoal multiple times a day to brush their teeth actually is causing their sensitivity?
Yeah, it could very well be possible.
All right, let's pivot and talk about the lawsuit. I know that it's definitely at the forefront of my customers' minds. It's definitely still a concern. And I want to take a little bit of a step back and preface the questions that I'm going to ask you with a little bit of education coming from a legal background and working with companies who have been sued in these class action lawsuits in the past. One of the reasons why I chose at the very beginning, when I read the lawsuit that was filed against Risewell, which was a law firm that made a claim that one tube of kids' toothpaste tested positive for PFAS using a total organic fluorine test, and then followed up with a lawsuit. One of the things that really made me upset in this industry as a whole is that there is this rise of lawsuits against companies who are clean, non-toxic, have deep ethics, and are trying to do the right thing. And so from a legal perspective, the reason for that is, and I think this is important for people to understand, these ingredients that other companies are using that are adding into their products things like PFAS, companies who are actually using PFAS as ingredients in their products, you can't sue them. You cannot take them to court and say, you're using PFAS in your products. You're using, you know, list the other toxic ingredients that I talk about all the time. And you can't take them to court and make them pay for whatever thing you're upset about. And that is because these ingredients are not illegal. But what is happening right now in the industry is that people like you, people who feel very deeply that we need truly clean products on the market, are creating companies. They're starting small companies. They're building companies on this new promise that we're going to do things clean. And I love and support those companies. And the problem with that in this industry that we have right now with lawyers is that now you have a target, because the minute a company comes out and says, we're making something really clean, we are a PFAS-free company, we are a X-free, whatever ingredient there is, that leaves the door open for these lawyers who all they do is class action lawsuits all day long. It opens the door to say, actually, you're not telling the truth. So we're going to go get this single tube of toothpaste or this single whatever product we're talking about, and we're going to send it to a lab. And by personal experience, I can tell you not all labs are created equal. There are labs that are very high quality that people will go to if they want the best results. And then there's labs that will test for whatever you want. And there's a lot of false positives that come out of labs like that. And I'm not making any accusations. I'm just saying my experience, that this happens a lot. And for purpose of people that don't understand that what happens behind the scenes, and the reason why so many companies settle these lawsuits is because of this. These lawyers come to the company and they say, hey, we found this whatever product and we found trace amounts of whatever ingredient, and you claim as a company that you don't use this ingredient. So if you give us X amount of money, we will go away. And unfortunately for the company that is put in that position, the amount of money they would pay to make that lawsuit go away is usually equal to or a little bit less than what it will cost them to actually defend the lawsuit. And these smaller companies, and I've seen this, these smaller companies, they don't have the money to defend these lawsuits, to drag out the defense of their company and what they're doing. And so we call it nuisance value. If the nuisance value to make it go away is the same or less than it would cost to actually defend the suit, most companies are put in a position where they're given the advice, you need to just pay to make this go away. Even if they're right, even if they're innocent, even if they've done nothing wrong. And this is something that is going to become more and more of a problem. And if I were sitting in my position right now thinking about, you know what, I want to create a clean company. I want to create product. I've thought about this. I have thought long and hard about maybe I should just produce my own products that meet my own standards. In this legal climate, I would never do that. And how sad is it that you have companies that maybe aren't being built at all, or companies who are small and doing the right thing, and they're put in a situation where because they're claiming and they're trying to be non-toxic, now they're targets for these lawyers who are outwardly seeking people to use to sue companies. And I think a lot of people think that these lawsuits come from upset moms or people who feel wronged. And what they really don't realize is that these legal firms go and find plaintiffs. That's typically how it works. So there's just an overall, I want people to understand the way these lawsuits work. And I just want to ask you guys, because I know the recent lawsuit that they're claiming there is PFAS in toothpaste. It was based on a single test that was run from a single facility. Talk to me about the tests you guys actually run and where you're at as far as defending that lawsuit.
Yeah, so I'm happy to jump in here. We have done testing for many years since the start of our business. And with, keep in mind, they tested all of our products and it was one singular tube of kids' toothpaste, as you noted, that came back. Our experts believe that this is a false positive test just based on the information we were given about the test. And we, for their kids' toothpaste in particular, we have actually tested at one of the best labs and one of the most expensive tests that you can run. And as you noted, there's a whole spectrum. You can do your $20 version, you can do your $2,000 version. And we have actually tested every single batch of kids' toothpaste for the last 3 years. And something that we've just proactively been doing with our consumers. If anyone has any questions about their specific lot number, you can actually look on the back of your kids' toothpaste. You can email us hi@risewell.com, and we can actually send you the specific testing that we've done. We have never, ever had any positive PFAS results come back with any of the testing that we've done. And as we talked about in the beginning of the podcast, we spent 3 years going through every single ingredient, meeting with every single supplier. And that's not to say that things can't happen, obviously, that are out of your control. And that's true of any company. And that's why we've been so diligent about testing. And we're also trying to be as transparent as possible. And we strongly believe in our innocence, which is why we're going down this more arduous path. But we believe that's really important because we are innocent in this case. But we're also trying to be transparent with consumers to let them know, look, here's the testing that we've done. We're willing to share this with you. And we're also very open to feedback from our customers on how we can do better and do more, because that's something we always want to strive for. And I think transparency is something that we would like to really set the tone on for the industry in setting the bar high about this is how one has to be transparent with their consumers. And as always, in your first experience in being introduced to our brand from the very beginning, when you interacted with us, we try to let everyone know exactly who our suppliers are and how much of our ingredients are in the tube of toothpaste, and to a point that at least I haven't seen with any of our competitors. So I think that all of those things are extremely important to us. And again, strongly believe in our innocence and are excited to see this out and to continue to be extremely transparent with our consumers.
Thanks, Corey. Yeah. And I just want to add, number one, you guys have my full support, and I don't give my support lightly. You are truly the most transparent of all toothpaste companies that I have reached out to. And I've reached out to the vast majority of them. Your company has always provided me with anything and everything that I have ever asked for. Almost no other companies know the exact source, and you can trace the exact source of what is in the toothpaste to the extent that you guys care and do. And the fact that you provide the testing of each batch. If I were to send an email right now and say, I want every single test that you've run for 3 years, not that I want all of that, but I've gone back quite a while and you guys have provided, there isn't anybody else that is doing what you're doing. And the reason why I am so adamant in my support of you is, one, if somebody doesn't defend against these lawsuits, they will continue to happen. And so I think you guys are doing the industry a service by defending it and claiming your innocence and saying, no, we do all the right things. But I also think you set the standard for the industry. I think anytime there's a company that's that transparent, it really forces the rest of the industry to move further in that direction, because they see that this is what consumers want. And when you are so transparent in what you do, then the people who are your customers that are, you know, buying other things from other companies, even if it's not toothpaste, they now have that confidence of, I'm just going to email them and ask them for this. And when companies are not transparent, they have you to compare them to. And so I applaud you guys for your ingredients. I applaud you for your transparency. I'm very grateful you're defending this lawsuit, and you have my full support. In fact, I have a link to your toothpaste in the podcast show notes with a discount. And I just want to say to my audience, my family uses Risewell, and there is nothing that I have seen or heard or has been represented that would make me stop. And so I'm very comfortable with my kids, with myself. We use Risewell, and we will continue to use Risewell.
Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for being on the podcast. I wish you absolutely the best.